Welcome. We're Books and Baddies,
a reader's podcast for hotties who read hot books.
From YA slow burns to all out monster fucking.
Join us as we break down shame,
embrace sexuality,
chase romance butterflies,
and find joy in literature that calls to us.
If you were that kid reading in the back of the classroom,
this podcast is for me and Kelsey and Mary and you also.
And
people who like books. And
people, who like to chat. And yeah.
Oh.
It's chatty time. Ooh, me. That's me. Hi.
Yeah, that's you.
Well, all right. What's up, folks? How we doing?
I got really
okay.
Locked
How are
into
you?
Walked into the whispering.
Just walked into a weird strobe light chatty room.
I love it.
We're gonna start the way we always do, and then we'll talk about our reason for being here today. Our Lord and Savior, Mary Pearson. Anyway, so my name's also Mary, and
I
was rereading a certain book that we're gonna talk about, but when I was in Kansas City at a certain amazing bookshop called Under the Covers, Abby said, Mary, here's an Elsie Silver book. You should read it. Yay. So I'm going to start reading it tomorrow. And it's called, you just told me the name and I've forgotten. It's on my nightstand. What is it?
Flawless.
Thank you.
And Mary, yes. Those books are being turned into a TV show. So.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well,
and the internet is saying, will it be on Netflix or will it be on Pornhub? And that is a great question.
Honestly, I feel like Amazon Prime's been like all over that kind of thing recently.
Well, Amazon Prime picked up a different cowboy romance series that I love, which I'm going to make you read also, which Kelsey has read.
What is it?
That one is Lila Sage, Lost and Lassoed. And that one is going to get picked up by Prime.
And wow. Guess what? We're going to talk more cowboy romances in another episode too. Hey, so,
which is why I need to start reading for homework.
Yeah.
But speaking of cowboy romances, I'm Addie, and I'm also reading a book by Elsie Silver right now, but I'm reading Wild Card, which is the last one in the series, which is basically completing her whole universe. And we're finally getting a character we've always wanted to, and that's all I'm going to say.
I need to catch up. I haven't read that one yet. Taya.
Hi.
I'm Kelsey.
Hi, Kelsey.
I just started last night after reading some Ice Planet Barbarians, which, y'all, I read the 9th one and it made me cry. More to come.
Aww,
it was so moving.
Ice Planet Barbarians.
It was beautiful. But anyway, right now I'm actually reading In the Veins of Drowning by Kaylee Cassidy. It's another like romantasy book. It's really fast paced.
Are we romantasy people?
No. Never. Yeah,
no, don't
tell me. More of a nonfiction girly myself.
I prefer just reading cookbooks from cover to cover.
That
like add the black beans to the pot. Stir the black beans. Season the black beans. Stare at the black beans.
This is a pot. This is a podcast of a lot of white people. I don't think any seasoning is happening in that. But
white people taco night. Oh my god. We're getting ground beef from the grocery store.
And sour
and courting
cream.
A Bristol Keys from the grocery store.
Okay, well,
I'm so glad you guys knew my reference.
If y'all haven't noticed already, we're a little bit more chaotic, dare we say. Feral is a great word, the normal.
And unsupervised.
Refresh. Yeah, exactly. Batty night out. This is a chatty. I was going to say off script, but like we don't script.
Really do scripts anyway. We go,
but our pants are on.
We go off the trail, like off the tracks,
off the trails, off the rails,
off the trails, off everything, off the edge of the cliff. We have a very rough
tits out
outline of what we want to talk about. And then we just yap, we be yapping. So
yeah. So pretend you're here yapping with us.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You are. Pour some wine.
Have a drink. I'm having a gin and tonic. If you can hear. And
honestly, this can be like Blue's Clues where like if we make a pause, insert your thoughts into it and we'll just pretend we heard you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There are no bingo cards or drinking games for this episode required.
Have you read Bristol Keys?
So Keats?
You guys, what is a Bristol
Keys?
You gotta wait for the pause, Addie.
Addie, wait, let's try it again.
Have you read Bristol
Keys?
Wow!
Wow!
So So yeah,
here's the book. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When she comes, I want to wail.
What?
Is that VeggieTales?
No,
I think that's Blue's Clues.
Oh, it
but
is.
What about
I should
when
know
she
that.
Comes, I want to wail? What did you say?
Oh, I just adjusted that for this.
Oh, you did. Like, that was an original text, was it?
That was like Sabrina Carpenter's house tour.
I was like, is this canon Blue's Clues?
It's a little enough. Canon Blue's Clues is Steve from Blue's Clues making girls come.
We just got
he is hot. Steve is hot. But anyway, back true. To Bristol anyway. Keys. Mary.
Hello.
Set us up for why we're doing this today.
Yes.
Yeah, Mary.
Hey, Eddie.
What's up?
How you doing?
Did you have something to say? Or were you just saying
no, I just said hi.
Oh, hi. Hi. Glad you're here. Okay, so... Jesus Christ. Good luck to all of you out there. Feel free to skip. Just kidding. Please stay.
No, no.
You.
Stay.
Stay, stay. Come on. Don't go. Don't. Okay, so we are reading a book by Mary Pearson. Mary E. Pearson. I'm going to guess that the E stands for Elizabeth.
I have no legs to stand
on for that. That's a guess, but let's pretend it's true. We're going to read the book, The Courting. We actually have. We've read the book, The Courting of Bristol Keats. And the reason I have brought this book to my friends and forced them to read it I have had a bit of an obsession with her for, I don't know, like since the pod started, I almost want to say. And I've got on many a rant. So if you are a loyalist, a true fan, a diehard, an OG, a day oneer, you're going to be really annoyed and say, Mary, you don't shut up about this. Why do you pretend like this is new news? And for those of you who are brand new and just joining us, first of all, hi, glad you're here. I'm going to talk about why she's amazing,
Mary?
And also what bugs me about her books.
I just want to make sure, is that your soapbox on the ground behind you?
Yes, I did.
You want to get up on it first?
I do. I want to get up on it. Get up on it. Okay, so first
get up on that soapbox.
Mary E. Pearson is one of my closest, dearest personal friends.
She's like internet besties, aren't you?
We are. I feel like that's true. I mean,
it is true.
When you tag an author in something and they like the tag, that's great. When they text you back, it's like mind-blowing. And especially that bestie level unlock, you say something back to them commenting and then they comment back and then you are the one to leave them on read. That's when you feel very powerful. And that's happened with Mary Pearson.
BFFs.
So
BFFs.
Yeah.
BFFs.
And also Gail Carson Levine. I have a thing for these ladies. I love them.
You've got great taste in women. You've got such good taste. Well, Mary, you had brought this book up to the baddies as like, you need to read this. And we were like, duh, say less. And we've heard your soapbox story multiple times. I know we've talked a lot about The Remnant Chronicles and
which is still to this day my favorite.
And then Dance of Thieves.
Yeah. And Dance of Thieves. Because like me, like a lot of other people, and I know you're gonna talk about this in a minute, but let me set it up for you.
I
read Dance of Thieves first, and the duet was really fun. It was really cool. I really liked it, but when you're reading it, you're like, I feel like I'm missing some like background or some context. And it wasn't
until later
that you told me why I felt that way.
And I was like, because you're missing three books, three of them, three whole fucking books. It would be
Mary's
not here, so I'm going to take this up. It would be like you start the Star Wars series with Rey and you're like, I feel like I'm missing something here because you fucking are.
Who's this like, Luke
who's,
guy?
Who's Luke Skywalker? You're like,
Who's Adam Driver? So, Mary, for those playing along at home, if you were introduced, if you walk into a bookstore, any bookstore, preferably independent, and say, I want to read the first book I should read from Mary E. Pearson, your close personal friend, what book would you read? Like, what would be the first two books that you would buy?
I feel like if you want to fall in love with her, you have to do Remnant Chronicles. The writing in that book, the storytelling, the way that she uses like what feels like the Bible in that world. It's not the Bible in our world to foreshadow the story and also talk about the myth, the myths, the lore, all of it. It's like so amazing in my humble opinion. And I think that's why I just absolutely adore her. Cause I was like, this is the most rich storytelling ever.
Yeah.
So
I read Remnant Chronicles because you were like, Girl, you fucking gotta. And I was like, done. Yeah. And I love, love, love the first one because it's told from three perspectives. And I know we're not talking about Remnant Chronicles on this episode, but we like, just to like explain the craft of Mary. Yeah. Like, Mary E. Pearson is, it's told from three perspectives. It's like the princess, the, I forget, what are their names?
The assassin and the the princess, the assassin, the prince.
Okay. And you know the names of those characters, but you don't know between the two guys who is who from the storytelling. Ooh. And it is incredibly done. Yeah. And like you can guess, but like she does it so well. We're like,
you kind of second guess yourself.
there's so many red herrings.
Okay, maybe I should read these. I haven't yet.
Addie, it's so fun. And then the way it like wraps up, and like the first book was so spectacular. Solid.
Yeah.
I will say I did not love the third in that series as much as I loved the first, but it was still a really good trilogy as a whole. We texted about it, Mary, but the first one is just
chef's kiss.
Beautifully done. I think I literally complained in our Red Queen episode that I was like, why didn't we not read the first Remnant Chronicles?
Because I couldn't bear anyone criticizing Remnant Chronicles.
Yeah. And I don't blame you because it's a damn good book. Like it's a really good book.
I have to offer up books to the chat that I'm okay with some criticism.
I was going to say, you have to...
not open for criticism. It's I will take no notes.
Gotta be a darling you're willing to kill. It's like, kill your darling. It's gotta be
I'm
ready.
Willing to accept, like, oh yeah, there's some fault. There's no faults with Remnant Chronicles book one.
So, Kelsey, you have read Dance of Thieves and Remnant Chronicles, and then Mary, you also have.
Yep. So I've read Remnant Chronicles and I've read it in the correct order. So it's like there's three Remnant Chronicles books, and it's like the Something of Deception, the whatever. I'm being really helpful right now. And then there's the duology, the Dance of Thieves and the Vow of Thieves. And the main character in the Dance of Thieves is actually kind of a knight for the princess in the Remnant Chronicles, who's now queen, obviously, because that's how fantasy novels work. So the interesting thing is Courting of Bristol Cates exists, as far as I know now, outside of all of that. So you can also read that first if you want to.
So this is actually my first Mary E. Pearson book out of all of those. I haven't read any others. So I feel like I will have kind of that. I was going to say, I'll kind of have that outside perspective of no, it didn't intertwine. Because I think when you talk about like Sarah J. Maas, who has Throne of Glass series and then like Court of Thorns and Roses and then Crescent City, when you're reading Crescent City, even though it feels like a different timeline, a different world, it crosses over, and so you're like, wait a minute, are all three intertwined? Versus when I was like, if you just read Crescent City by itself, you would have no idea what's going on.
And as far as I know now, Bristol Cates is not a part of that world, but I mean, Sarah J. Maas threw me for a loop.
You never know.
Well, I was like, should we get into it? Let's get into
Let's get into it. And I will say this, I am, unlike Remnant Chronicles, I am open to criticism and I'm open to making fun of and all of these things, because at the end of the day, although I loved this book, Remnant Chronicles is better. Just going to put it out there. So with that,
this was really,
yes.
Well, let's start with like, I think Remnant Chronicles is amazing because it's a really good YA. It is a solid YA series. Courting of Bristol Cates is a new adult book, and it's Mary E. Pearson's, I think, like, tell me if I'm lying, but it's like her first.
Yes. As far as I know.
Yeah. So it
Which
was
shocked me.
It's fun watching an author stretch in that way, and she did a really great job with it.
She did a great job, and I feel like a lot of times, I actually just finished a book by an author who I loved as a YA author. And it was an arc for a book that's coming from Rainbow Rowell, who wrote Eleanor and Park and Landlines and all of those. And her new adult doesn't grab me like her YA does. And her new adult feels like I'm reading a YA author try to get into it. And I know, I think the mindset is very different when you're reading a YA book, when you're reading a book from a YA author that you loved as an adult, or reading an author that you loved as a YA adult. I don't know, but it's interesting for me because like I haven't read any of her YA stuff, so I haven't read any of Mary Pearson's YA, and so for her to, and we'll talk about it later, I guess I don't want to get off track, but I think it was super interesting reading this with fresh, full brand new eyes.
Mary, do you maybe want to give a TLDR for what this book is about?
I would love to.
And for those who read it a couple weeks ago and can't remember.
So, right, exactly. So there is a quote from my network is struggling. I feel that way too.
It's always I'll let you know that's always up there. So don't even worry about it.
Oh, that's nice.
Mentally, emotionally, physically, it's just struggling.
Okay. Your network's always just weak, which is fine.
Okay. Don't speak to her network like that.
Yeah,
that's my baby.
All right. Lindsay said something a couple of weeks ago and it cracked me up. So this book is called The Courting of Bristol Keats. And she was like, that sounds like it was generated by AI. What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah, you don't know that her name is Bristol Keats. Like, that's
right. So, fun fact, I did not know that her name was Bristol Keats until I did start the book.
Yeah, right. Same.
So that's and then fair, I was like, oh, I get like it now. So that like, the minute I started, her name was Bristol Keats. I was like, oh.
Yes, so it's called The Courting of Bristol Keats because...
Oh, I hear you.
Here's what happens. Bristol is one of three daughters from Logan and Mary Keats. And unfortunately, kind of before the story starts, both of her parents die and she and her sisters are struggling to make ends meet in a small town where they have finally sort of put down roots. And she is, which is something that they never got to do growing up. They always had to be moving from one place to the next. Her parents were artists. So they never got to like really be enrolled in school. They never got to own a house. It was just one thing after another, and they were always moving. And she always thought it was because they were living this like free hippie caravan homeschool your kids lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So she thought, dun dun dun. But then one day she's approached, well, after multiple letters from this mysterious aunt saying, like, I was your dad's aunt, I have an inheritance for you, and Bristol and my sisters are really struggling. So she's like, okay, maybe I should go figure out what this is. And it's actually kind of a ploy from the fairy world, which is in this universe, the real world, and they are living in this like kind of alternate reality created by the Fae. And they're like, hey, we need you to come into our world to help us figure out something. There's something really bad going on in our world, and you might have the specific trait that we're looking for. So if you come with us, we're going to give you some Leonardo da Vinci, right? Was it Da Vinci? No, Leonardo. Who was it?
Da Vinci. I almost said DiCaprio.
Are you thinking of like, yeah, it was Da Vinci who did the,
we're going to give
like
you these
the Da Vinci
really,
code.
Yeah, priceless Da Vinci sketches, and you can sell them and make sure your sisters are taken care of if you come work for us. And she was like, what? Like,
yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, and we should, I don't know if I was listening. I was active listening, but her mom died a few months ago and her dad died not far
when she was
after.
Like, yeah.
Yes.
And so she feels like the sole provider for her sister. So that is the extra like pressure under like, damn. Okay. Damn. I guess
that mentality follows her throughout the entire book.
Absolutely.
Is that she has that like oldest, not even oldest child, but like
she's not. Yeah. Kat's her
she's
oldest
not the oldest book. Child, but she almost has that like, I have to fix it. I have to take care of them. If
her
anybody is watching my life
fighter.
With the Walter boys, like it's definitely like that coded where she's like, everything bad has happened to me, so I have to fix everybody else's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she accepts it and she enters into this world where she's asked to basically join the army, more or less. She goes to boot camp. She goes to school where it's like Fae school, learn about the Fae. And she finds out that she is possibly a descendant of someone called like a door opener or something about a door. Basically, someone who can open and close portals. And oh, Kelsey's flashing her legs. I'm very distracted.
I'm sorry. We're in the chat. Addie's like, why are you like wiping yourself? I had to put butter on. I got
sunburn. I'm literally sitting here trying not to go because she's really like, I can just see her arm moving.
Sorry,
and,
Mary.
Like, going like this in the background. I'm like, well, what are you up to over there? Are you okay?
I got like really, really bad sunburn a whole week ago that I think I did like pretty intense UV damage to my blood vessels and my leg. Like they're just fried.
Oh,
and
no.
So I was like sitting here and I'm like, my legs are too dry. So I'm going to go get butter.
I'm
going to
go oil up.
I know. Yeah. I'm literally using it. Addie's like, what are you
doing? TLDR is like
and I just
very
like,
long. So I'm sorry.
No, but keep going. Because it's important. I want to hear it.
Yeah.
Keep going. I'm listening. I'm just rubbing myself down in oil.
And I love that for you. Please continue. So anyway.
And I'm just trying not to giggle.
She's pretty stressed because she's like, I'm not noticing that I have any magical powers. I don't think I have what they're looking for.
Yeah.
And also she's kind of falling for, but also fighting with the current king of the region that they are in Elfheim, which Kelsey's going to talk about Elfheim and what it is a little bit. Yeah. So anyway, they have a grumpy sunshine thing going on, but they like switch roles every other chapter. So
I love the grumpy sunshine.
Yeah, anyway, so turns out she has this block on her magic. They find out pretty much towards the end of the book that they have something called a tick. If you've ever heard of a tick, yeah. Exactly what you think.
Hated it.
But it's fucking huge, hated and it's on her back.
I had gross dreams after this one.
Yeah, and it's blocking all of her magical powers, and perhaps without it, she would be a very powerful creature and possibly not fully human. So there's some issue there. And we also learn a little bit more about her parents. And if you can assume, because maybe you've read a book or two before and you know how fantasy goes, it turns out that maybe they didn't die. Maybe some other things have been happening. Maybe they're in this mm-hmm. very world right now. Bum, yeah. Bum, bum.
Mary, something that you mentioned that I, before I forget, yeah. want to just talk about, and I know we can go through every main character, but the one thing that surprised me right off the bat, and maybe this is just a trait of who I am as a person, et cetera, was that Bristol never seemed shocked that there was a fae world or that she could have power or that she had this ability. She never had, and I probably sound like such a, like, I say this all the time in every episode, but like, where is her moment of like, and she has it like briefly, but it's not like, what the hell is going on? Like, I'm sorry, there's a fae world.
Mm-hmm.
Did she just burp? Yeah, I have a thought, but you just burp.
Addie, and I think that's because, like, she watches all this shit happen to her in front of her. Like, she looks in the door and she sees all the creatures. Like, she goes to meet her aunt and she grabs the paper, but then, like, she leaves and she sees that, like, mm-hmm. she sees them. So I feel like she was like, haha, whatever at first, but I always feel like people believe it more when they see it with their own eyes, because she's like,
so true.
I can't say it's not real because it's literally happening to me.
Right. I think what's crazy for her too was when she went to the inn to like meet her aunt, and then she realized what was kind of going on. And so she went back to the, or when she realized what was going on and all these creatures were there and they had like horns and whatever. And she literally saw people from her town, like, the mayor and the sheriff, like, with their glamour gone, and like they had horns and they had, you know, like goat feet or whatever, and she was like, wait a minute, the fuck, you know? So it wasn't, it's even literally just that there's reverse. A whole other world. It's that the worlds were crossing over. And then she just was like, okay, well, I guess if you can't beat them, join them, let's fucking go.
like I need money,
I need Da Vinci, so
okay.
The other thing too is that, contrary to every, almost I feel like every fae book I have read, it is that the human world is the, like, AU. It's like the alternate universe instead of it being flipped.
Yeah.
And that was also something that right away I was like, ooh, I like this already, because I thought it was just a different way to put her. It wasn't just like the fae take her and she goes into fae world and then comes back and everything is fine. Mm-hmm. It's like, wait a minute, this does cross back over into real life, and this crosses back into modern time, which is another thing that we have to talk about, is this is not a corsets and tea and porridge drinking book. She works at a pizza parlor, and
oh my god,
they have electricians and
the her IRL life. I love, I'm gonna sidebar really fast, Addie, and I'm sorry if I'm
no go for it, but I'm like, yeah, I'm like, I don't know how I feel about it. So
the reason they like court her as someone to like do this work is she is like scary good at delivering pizzas. He's literally like on that her little bike. Happy. Her like tiny magic ability is that she can like deliver pizzas like a superpower. Like she can anticipate when people are coming, and she like moves and can maneuver and travel like so well. And I just thought it was so fucking cute that that was the thing, that like your superpower is you're a pizza delivery girl. Like,
well, and they know who she's related to.
Yes,
which is,
they know who her parents are. But
they
were like,
picked her compared to her sisters because she's a pizza delivery girl.
Yeah,
they even like on her way out of the inn when she was trying to run away, they like were throwing objects in her way, and she was like, bob, weave, duck, roll, you know, like it was just like,
all right.
The montage scene that happened in my brain.
Yeah.
We always talk about a fighting montage and a training montage. That is a montage scene if you've ever heard one. Montage.
Literally the sound I heard in my head during that scene where all the furniture was flying around was like, do, 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 do.
Oh, see, I was hearing dun, 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 dun.
Oh, that's good too.
Like slow-mo and like,
Quick note about Bristol in general. The reason she's kind of, they picked, I think, Da Vinci specifically to lure her in is her parents had an appreciation for art. She was raised on like appreciating the artists, learning Shakespeare, speaking tons of different languages. So like, yes, she was homeschooled, but she was homeschooled by some pretty exceptional people, quote unquote. And one of the biggest things that one of the things that she loved so dearly was art. And I just wanted to point out, because I did a quick Google search when we were talking about Mary Pearson, her degree is in art. And I was kind of wondering about that, because she does talk a lot about art in almost all of her books and also architecture. And I found out she was a second grade teacher.
Cute. Oh, that's why you guys are besties.
Like, I knew I liked you.
Oh my God, I love. Well, okay, how do we, so since this is a chatty and we're not formatting it like a normal book chat, how do we want to do it? What do we want to talk about? How are we going to do things?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like go ahead, Eddie.
Oh, I was going to say, I feel like we kind of gave an overview of Bristol, her parents.
Sort of.
I feel like the only, a little, sort of, but I feel like we haven't really dived deeper into, I think something we need to talk about is her sisters and her sisters, the way that, like, and the role that her sisters play in this entire thing. But then we also need to talk about Mr. Grumpy himself.
Right.
Yeah, I want to talk about Tygon.
This is the romance pot, so, you know.
She just talked to hair behind her ear.
Tygon. Right now. Well, yeah, let's, his name was Tegan, so my bad.
It's spelled T-Y-G-H-A-N. I just looked up, we just had this discussion before we hit
record. What if it's a silent G? I looked up,
well, it's based on a Scottish or an Irish word, and this is all based on Scottish lore.
What if
lore.
It's a silent T? Cyan.
Cyan. Well, or, it's Tygon based on the word.
That may be funny.
But I wanted to bring that up because a lot of this book is rooted in Scottish folklore. So Elfame, which is where it is and where Tygon is the king of the court that he's in. He's part of the Seelie court. Mm-hmm. That's all really rooted in classic, you know, fae folklore from Scottish and Northern English. So Mary did her research, which we love to see.
And not me, Mary, to clarify.
Yeah, Mary E. Pearson did her research. MEP. MEP. MEP did her, Mep. Mep did her research.
I love it. Yeah.
But anyway, so, yeah, with Tygon, he's our hot, fae, little
tortured.
Temporary king, because his brother's missing, right?
Mm-hmm. I just want to go on the record that when he was feeling tortured and sad and had little nightmares and she was there for him, I may or may not have read that chapter, seen part of it five times in
See,
a row.
I knew, like, you'd,
I just kept going
that.
Back. There is nothing I love more than a man who takes on more than he should in his kingdom, and it all falls down on him. Mm-hmm. And like, he needs to be rescued. And they're like, nothing can help him. You just have to let him brood. You know, he's taking on so much. And then she goes in and helps him.
Yeah. Oh.
And I think maybe the piece that is missing here of why that matters is that he has powers himself.
Oh, yeah.
And this is something that kind of, I don't know that I caught this right away. And I'm curious if you guys did. Is I don't know that I specifically caught what he could do until later in the book, when he basically has like a "where did she go? Who did this to you?" scene.
Say more.
Like, and maybe I'm just misremembering it. Maybe I'm trying to remember, but I feel like when you first meet him, you know that stuff has happened to him, and you know that, like, I think right off the bat, the first kind of introduction you get to him is that he's been in an attack, and that he has a big
scar down his side.
Yeah, he's got a huge scar that's being... Kelsey. You love scar play, Kelsey?
Well, no, I want to just chime in with the background, because, like, it's important to understand. We don't find out the full story until later, but the background is that Bristol's father was his best friend, and time moves differently in the fae realm than it does in the human realm. So only 6 months ago, Bristol's father had a task. He didn't do it, and he betrayed and stabbed Tygon and left and disappeared
with a demon blade.
Yeah. And we don't find out to the end that he didn't know it was a demon blade. I know. And then Tygon's like, no, you like fucking stabbed with the demon blade. And what does that mean? It means that, like, is it 100,000 or how many demons torment him?
Yeah, 1,000. Yeah.
Too many. Like, yeah. And he has this room where he's marked every demon so he can count how many he has. So his nightmares aren't just nightmares. Like, he's literally being tortured by demons because his supposed best friend betrayed him and stabbed him and, like, did this to him. And he's falling in love with that man's daughter. Like,
Yeah. And my favorite thing about Tygon, when he first hears Bristol's coming, he's like, she's grown? What? What do you mean?
She's yeah, like, yeah.
What?
Maybe not my favorite thing, but I thought it was a cute little aside.
So maybe no, it's not even cute. That is his power. It's that it's his
burden to bear.
Yeah. Burden. I was going to say it's yeah. like he channels into it at some point, but he's able to use it. But at the same time, it almost like wreaks havoc on him.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, like pretty much destroys him.
I have one more sidebar that I love about him. One of my Tell favorite me. Parts of yes. the book was Bristol and Tygon's discussions about things in the human realm that he doesn't understand. And one of them is a laundromat.
Oh my
and
God.
I just love that he's yes. like, I just yes. want to go to a laundromat with you. And that, it just makes me think of Everything Everywhere All at Once, the mm. quote where he's like, I would have been happy to do taxes and laundry with you forever. Mm. Like it's in the, I don't know if you guys have seen that movie. It's in the reality.
I haven't.
It's multi-realities. It's in the reality where they don't end up together, but they're both really successful because of it. And it's basically like, success means nothing. Like I would have been happy to do taxes and laundry with you instead. And so him just being like, I want to go to the laundromat with you. I'm like, that's so beautiful.
Yeah. And she like describes it. She describes a laundromat so poetically. She's like, it's new beginnings. It's the smell of lavender. It's the sound of coins clinkling. And he was like, yes. he's like, that sounds nice.
He was like, that's
and
magical.
That also pulls you back to the fact that her real life, her real universe is laundromats and pizza and mm-hmm. answering the phone and mm-hmm. electricians and things like that. So it also takes you out of the fae world and puts you back into that and says like, wait a minute, she's actually not been here that long.
Yeah, mm-hmm. true that.
I think the other piece that we haven't really talked about is the fact that he's the king.
Right, and we should talk about why he's the king because that's important.
Yes. Mary. I was going to say, can we circle back to the fact that he is the king?
Yes, of this region in Elfame. And what's interesting is he's kind of like, there's like high kings. Is that a good way to describe it? There's like, you can be a king of a region and then you can be like the high king of Elfheim.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's like the year where the high
he's
king
like a senator, if you will. Yeah.
Is picked. And so there's some political drama going on with a different king of a different nation. And it's kind of like, you know, the big bad dark nation with Cormac. And Cormac is the king of that nation. And he is, they believe, opening portals and dumping in the undead army, which is like a bunch of like bits and pieces of people's bodies and animals fused together to create an army, which is super disgusting. And he's kind of campaigning to be High King, but by kind of like secretly terrorizing the smaller regions and then putting on the front of being very charismatic and charming to all the other ones.
Yeah,
and
I had to very quickly read through that because that was giving me...
It's pretty gnarly.
Where are Tiff and Mary when you need to talk about a scene in a very specific part of Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time when they go into the church or they go into the town after nighttime, right at the beginning before he's an adult, and there's all those weird naked dead bodies that grope you and kill you? You know what I'm talking about? Anybody? No.
No. But I love the energy.
That's amazing.
I was a little video gamer.
Did you mean Tiff and Lindsay?
Yeah,
did you mean Tiff and Lindsay?
What did I say? I'm a Zelda person.
Tiff and Mary.
Oh, Tiff and Lindsay.
I'm honored that you'd associate me as a Zelda person. I'm not that cool, unfortunately. But anyway, Cormac kidnapped the actual king, Tygon's older brother, like Kane. I don't
know. I forgot his name. So
he was kidnapped on his way to go do his the dirty with his mistress.
Wait,
he was kidnapped.
This is
kind of funny.
Kale.
It's funny.
No, I think it's like Kane or something. I'm not sure.
No, I briefly listened to some of this book and it was Kale.
Oh, is it? Is Kale back?
Because I got confused because I was like, wait, Kale?
That's hilarious.
C A E L. Kale.
Yeah,
Kale's
we have
bad,
another
baby.
Kale.
We got another Kale.
Kales. This one's They're spelling both kind of useless. Makes more sense than Chaul.
Chauga. Anyway, so that's why Tygon is king right now because his brother's been kidnapped. And that's also one of the subplots is to try to get his brother back. So, yeah.
Well, okay. I had a question and then it literally flew away.
The other man that we need to talk about is Aerys.
Oh, yes.
Because what I would love is just a little sidebar or like a little arrow. And then Mary E. Pearson, if you could just write me a little Aerys daydream, if you will. Like, you know,
who is
what kind of wine does he drink? It's kind of like his like first commander in chief, I think. I feel like Eris turns out a lot around him, and I think he's kind of like a best friend of sorts. It's E-R-I-S.
I don't see it in my... I literally don't know.
He's the one
that
like kind of convinced Tygen to bring Bristol to...
Yes. Okay, he's very...
What do you like about...
Yeah,
what do you like about him? Because I don't remember. I was picturing a tall, scrawny guy.
Yeah. So I think I like him because he is almost like the military political strategist of the group. Mm-hmm. So he is the one that is saying, like, this is the danger of bringing her here. This is also what's going on in the Fey world. I also find that he has like a little bit of manipulation tactics to him. Like he's a little, he's not, okay, like he's almost not the villain, but he's not on the good guys. And so I think that there's got to be something more.
Ooh, like in next books, like so, you just feel like it's a good setup.
My sidebar daydream that I would like to have is I would just like to know, like, is he truly a good person or good fae?
That's
or
good
is he infiltrating the inner court as a like political strategist and he is trying to flip the court under the other way? Because I think that he, you get little sidebars about him and you get little moments with him where he says stuff or like someone comes to him and tells him something.
Yeah.
And his reaction is not what you think it's going to be. You think he's going to say, oh, I'm going to go and save the king, or like, oh, I'm going to go tell the king and report this. And instead he's like, don't tell anybody.
Wild.
Well, it almost gives me a little political, like, I don't know, like maybe a little political strategist vibe of like that guy who's on the inner court, or like maybe I watch too much Madam Secretary or something, but like I feel like maybe there is something to him that's more than what's on page.
Ooh, I love that idea. I mean, betrayal is not off the table. We see a lot of betrayal. Yeah. I mentioned the dad earlier, but maybe we
not
should
our
talk-
daddy, someone else's daddy.
We should talk more about Bristol's parents, maybe.
I would love that. So here's the
I still don't
spoiler.
Know how I feel.
Yeah. Spoiler. So either read the book or, you know, don't read it.
Don't listen to this episode.
This conversation. But here's the thing about Bristol's parents. They are both from Elfheim. Sort of. Bristol's dad fell into the world when he was a little kid and was raised in the same court as Tygen.
He's a changeling.
But Mare is called the... Oh God, I gotta look that up. Someone else needs to talk about her while I Google it, or someone else Google it. But she is basically the monster of Elfheim or the monster of Danu. And she controls a bunch of portals and she works for Cormac in that kingdom, that kind of villainous and evil kingdom. And her dad, Bristol's dad, was sent on a mission to kill her.
Mm-hmm. And instead they like...
Yeah,
they meet up in this home and they fall in love. It's like it was going to be seduction to kill her because she he's like, well, we know she likes hot men, so I guess I'll go be a sacrifice, which go off, queen. And they basically realize that they're both knights for opposing kings, but that's all that they are, that they're knights, that they're being told what actions to take. Mare is full of this power, but it seems like she doesn't actually get to be in control of what she wants to do. And it's not that the father is necessarily unhappy. He's just like, what if the two of them decide, like, what if we paved our own way? What if we had a path where, like, we didn't kill each other and we didn't have to exist at the whims of kings? And what if we just, what if we ran away together? And, like, their romance was breathtaking to me to find in bits and pieces, to learn that, like, they betrayed their kingdom, but for love, for care, for, like, a simpler life.
Yeah, I'm
just beautiful.
I completely agree. And I'm like,
and I would tell your children that you are dead and basically fake your death and say, oh, I'm not there anymore.
Yeah. Well, and that was because Cormac was threatening Mare's family. So she, the reason she mysteriously died was because she thought it was the only way to save her family was to go back to Elfheim and work for him again. And Bristol's dad, Logan, according to, you know, her, but goes by a different name in Elfheim. He's like, there's no way. Like, I'm going after her. I'm not going to let her suffer. I'm going to save her. And he's pretty sure her memory's been wiped and she's been brainwashed and all of these things. So it's like their romance, I feel, is what carries the book so beautifully. Oh. Tygen and Bristol are very cute and very sweet, but like, her parents just have what it takes to go the distance, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and with that beautiful romance in mind, how did you two feel finding out that Mare, the mother, left to protect her family, but Logan, the father, it's almost like he chose his wife over his children. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't think about mm-hmm. what would happen leaving their daughters. Mm-hmm. How did you two feel about that in reading that realization?
I don't know why, but I had a fierce feeling that I could not trust him.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
Right away when she was so... In this book, she basically gets a letter from him and goes to... I don't want to say she escapes, but like she goes to find him and yep. follows kind of a gut feeling. And this is when we get Tygon's like, who, like, where did she go? You must find her. I will do anything to go find her. Mm-hmm. Like, fiercely loyal, fiercely protective. The entire time she's going to do this, my gut feeling is in, like, my gut is in the gutter.
Mine was
like,
too.
I am sitting there. I'm like, what yeah. are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? He's going to kidnap you. He's going to take you somewhere. Yeah. There was no part of it where I said, yes, I trust him. But yeah. I think. Knowing what he's done for his family, I could see why you're supposed to trust him. Mm-hmm. I just think there's got to be something more. And maybe it's like my gut feeling that the other shoe is going to drop, or maybe that like something is going to happen in her second book, which is out in November already. But I think, I don't know, my entire feeling about him is like keep him at an arm's length. Mm-hmm. And maybe I have mm-hmm. secret issues somewhere uncovered, but like,
yeah.
I just don't trust people who somewhat come out of the woodwork and they're like, hey, we're besties. I'm like,
I completely agree. And I think there's something about the way that she writes his scenes. He's always underground. He's always in a seedy space. He's always sneaking around. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, it's not often these huge acts of heroism where you like trust him. It's like he's in a deep, dark cave manipulating mm-hmm. the trowels, or he's in a yeah. cabin. But like at the same time, like I do think he's a good character. I back to Kelsey's point though, I think it's a little fucked up to like abandon your kids.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't think he made the right choice.
No. Well, no, I'm with you. And I think what feeds into that too is we find out that tick that is on Bristol was put on her by her parents. And mm-hmm. so she's grappling with the understanding of like, maybe they did this to protect me. Mm-hmm. Or we're kind of grappling with it more, like of like maybe it was to protect her, or like why would they repress this thing in her? And so that combined with the abandonment of his children, and maybe he like they're grown, like maybe he's like they'll be fine. I'm not going to tell them because that keeps them more safe. And like I'm choosing the love of my wife to save her. Like I would want my partner to save me, but like I'm not a parent, so maybe right. the reality is as a parent I would be like, don't fucking come after me. Protect our children. Like
right.
I think yeah. He made a negligent decision, and it mm-hmm. almost feels like while their relationship and their love, the parents' love is so beautiful, it's also very toxic and painful Absolutely. To not only the kingdoms that they're connected to, but their own children. And that's interesting to me. It's juicy yeah. and it's fascinating.
I have two things. One, the only thing that I can compare this to is the very, very, very beginning of Finding Nemo.
Oh.
Is... when Marlin's wife, who I'm trying to remember what her name is, makes me cry like a baby. Like, I cry like a sob like a child every single time. That she basically jumps in front of, what is it? Some kind of, I don't even know what it is, like some kind of shark to save all of her babies. And then Nemo survives. The second piece of it is, oh, I lost my train of thought. Oh, the other piece of it is that her sister knows about the, so, mm-hmm. so to speak, tick. This entire time and hasn't really said anything to her. And that's the other piece is like her sister has kind of been aware of it, but hasn't said anything too. And it's like, has her sister also been in on it and just not said anything? Or did her sister purely say, I'm sorry, like mom and dad mentioned it to me when we were kids. And I just thought it was like them making a goofball about your birthmark.
I think she knew what it was, but I think it just shows that family was full of secrets.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
And in the, And they were, that was a, I mean, they moved so much and wouldn't say why, and they wouldn't really answer things directly. And it was all for safety, but you kind of learn the difference between, it's a balance between safety and transparency and being lied yeah. to and like trust. And so
right.
I think Mary Pearson wrote like this really, she did a really interesting job of navigating that, because none of her, like, the parents are not inherently good characters, and they're not supposed to be. Like, they're messy mm-hmm. and complicated, and they make mistakes. And I think that it makes for better characters and more interesting.
Absolutely. That's why I love those characters.
And I think it also showed that the sisters could survive on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that they could take care of themselves and be an intertwined universe.
Something that Bristow said towards the beginning of the book is about her mom mm-hmm. and how sometimes it felt like her mom was uncomfortable in motherhood. And I thought it was so interesting that Bristow was willing to admit that about her own mom. And it was like, she didn't know how to do it. It felt foreign to her. And you know why, once you get deeper in the story, she was literally like a caged monster / knight for a different country where she wasn't brought up with any love or tenderness. And then so Mare, we know, is this fierce protector. And meanwhile, her dad is just this like lover boy, artist, charming. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. And I think really cool that Mary Pearson decided to write those characters that way. Cause you don't often get to hear about an imperfect mother that's worth rescuing. They're normally just killed off, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, something that we should probably kill off soon is this tick, because I'm getting the creepy crawlies.
Can we stress how disgusting that is?
Okay. I was feeling, okay, first of all, the feeling I had in my mind of like that thin layer of skin and something peeking out of it. Like,
I know.
But also, like, when I discovered how big it was.
Oh. Well,
I thought it was like, and then
they would stab it to give her more power. But
would, like,
one of the notes I wrote down when reading this book that I wanted to talk to you both about is, would you have removed it if it was you with that tick? I know my answer. Addie and Mary, what is yours? Because let me explain why it was a question while you're thinking. Mm-hmm. Is Bristol is like, I could be really this really powerful. I could have more magic and I could have more power if I remove this, but I do not know what I will become if I do. So right, they kind of like started to remove it and they got part of it out and she got more magic, but then her like nails began to change and Tygen notices on her back like a patch of, I don't remember if it was scales or what it was, but like,
yeah.
She does not know what she'll become. And so that's her fear. And she decides not to remove it. But towards the end of the book, she has like part of it. She gets stabbed in the back. So like more of its blood releases into her, which releases her magic. So with that icky context, mm-hmm. do you know what would you do?
Yeah. And this tick is feeding on her, right? To keep her magic at bay. I feel like it's also, just so everyone knows, incredibly painful for them to remove it too. They did start and she like passed out from pain. Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind. And also some of the nurses, or not nurses, but witches that were going to remove it. One of them was like, I'm just going to stop her heart to take it out. And I don't necessarily have an intention of restarting it. So that's also interesting. I feel like I would say I would do it because I would like put on the front of being brave. But I wonder if in the moment, if I would chicken out.
I think... I get so that. Bad. It would depend on the drugs situation.
Like, yeah. Could is there I anesthesia?
So, like, here's okay.
You're this is my stop. You're this dead.
Is,
well,
this is my cute little rant about my wisdom teeth. Is that I still have my wisdom teeth, and I'm too scared to get them out. I have told my mom if they could put me out for like 5 or 6 days, then I would get them out because the upcoming anxiety of the before, then the actual thing, and then like the 2 or 3 days after, just. So mm-hmm. if they can put me out for like a solid 5 or 6 days, sure, they can take it out. They can try. Medical mystery. Good to go. If I have to like be in her situation, like if you popped me into her body in her situation, I think I would just let it sit there because I think I would be so scared of what would happen after. And I'd be so scared that it would turn into me becoming some sort of weird creepiness. I don't know. I also think that in the moment, I'd be curious to know, like, does she feel physical side effects of it? Or is it just, like, only when she touches it, it, like, moves around? Because, like, people say, it's like, oh, I forgot I was pregnant until it moved. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's fair. I think when I was reading it, I was annoyed that she did not just immediately take it out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because I understood her hesitation.
Giving solution-oriented baddie.
I know, literally. That's for real. No, but for me, I'm like, her fear of like, I don't know what I'll become. I'm like, I don't know what I've been holding back is like more the perspective.
That's a good point.
I have of like, I'm living a half truth. And even though it's been 20 years, like I would rather do it, remove it and like embrace my true self than not to. Even
I guess if it like was
a risk. Like, I would not keep that thing in me. I would risk dying to get it out of me, I think. And not just because it creeps me out, but because I would want to embrace my full being.
I think the other thing too, if you think about it, is this is like knowledge is power, is that I always have said, like, solutions are sometimes the best because you know as much information as you can. Oh, sorry. And maybe it is that, like, the people around her know as much as they can. And, like,
yeah,
it's like you've been through every single Google search, or, like, you've been through every single Reddit thread. And at that point, it's like you have to take the leap of faith.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember in the book when one of the marble statues from the Judge's Walk comes alive and almost, like, attacks her, the dragon?
I haven't watched it, and I never will.
In the book.
I thought you said Marvel.
No, in The Courting of Bristol Keats. When she
I literally heard in Marvel, and I was like, right, girl, in I don't the watch Marble. Marble, there we go.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go.
When she's walking through it, and there's a Kelsey. Dragon that, like, comes to life and bears its teeth and growls at her.
Yeah.
And they say it's where they put these crazy creatures that betray the kingdom for thousands of years as punishment.
Like, I was like,
that's an interesting aside.
Yeah.
And it just makes me feel like someone's getting put in there in book two, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, is it her once the tick's removed? Is it her mother once she's captured?
Yeah.
Is it her father for betraying the kid? Like, someone's got to be put in there. And when you guys said, like, she feels timid to unleash herself, I'm wondering if, you know, the heiress that you were talking about, just kind of thinking about sequel, like, how's that going to play out? You know?
Yeah. I think just really quickly too, and then we can move on. It is like when a show or a movie drops a plot point, like someone has heartburn, or like somebody says, like, oh, have you felt really bad from whatever we ate? Like, you know something's coming. Like, you know something is gonna happen. And so I feel like for her to quickly divert over into this segment and show you that says that something's is me. Coming.
Yeah.
As Taylor Swift would do, this is me dropping a little Easter egg for you later.
It's like on stage. Mm-hmm. If there's a gun somewhere on set at the beginning of the play, you know someone's getting shot at the end, you know? It's plant. But anyway, that's just a little thought. I feel like we do need to talk, because we are a romance podcast, about the romance.
Yo.
Would you call this book spicy? That's what I'm going to start with.
I think they make love. Like, I will say this. There is a difference to me between smut and love, or smut and spice, and love and romance. To me, they have, they make love and they are romantic. Mm-hmm. It's not like we are fucking like bunnies in a barn over on a cowboy. Like,
I mean, it's,
to me, the way that I saved a couple of highlights and I almost want to find them. Because
while you're pulling them up, Addie, I mean, it's new adult. So it says, like, there are sex scenes in the same way that, like, A Court of Thorns and Roses has sex scenes. Like, it's not adult. It's not erotica. So it's spicy. Like, there's sex scenes. I think Mary did a great job with them. Mary E. Pearson, to clarify.
She did
a really good job writing them, because we don't have that in her young adult. We have, like, lust and desire and like, tension in her other books. But she did a really great job with some of the scenes in this, but, you know, they're not super erotic, but they're still spicy. They're still a little spicy. Okay.
I found it. So I had taken, I read this as a physical book, and I took pictures.
Where did you
get
it? Where did you find it?
You know what? I actually ended up buying it. I went to a little book fair, like a street fair. And I saw it and I was like, you know what? I was like, this is a book Mary loved. And generally, I feel like you and I both, I feel like three of us like a book. It generally says to me that, like, it's worth buying. And also, I wanted to support the bookstores. So I was like, why not?
Yeah.
So I saved this highlight, and I saved it from here. It was, she wanted to reply, but wasn't sure how. Love was a strange word. Bristol couldn't quite trust it. It was used every day to place value on the simplest, most trivial things, from pizza toppings to overpriced party dresses to well-worn sneakers. Her mother had claimed Bristol's father was the love of her life, yet she left him and left him broken. What kind of love was that? Bristol knew she loved being with Tegan. She soaked in every minute they were together, and when they were apart, she couldn't wait to be with him again. His gaze was fire inside her. His kiss, just thinking about it, made her blood race. She would never tire of his lips on hers, or his hands exploring her body, or the way he studied her like he had found some fascinating treasure. There was no denying their lovemaking was great and getting better by the day. She was learning things, so was he. Both of them eager to please each other. But it was their small moments that together that whittled her to her core. The crook of her little finger hooked with his as they walked into drills. His laugh that came more often now. The way that he would notice a wayward strand of her hair and tuck it behind her ear. The sound of his breath beside her as he slept peacefully. His hand gently sponging her back as they bathed. His caress, slow and tender, mm-hmm. and the way that they talked in the middle of the night. Wanting mm-hmm. more of each other than they had wanted sleep. All these moments, they had filled an emptiness that had lurked inside her for too long.
Like, oh, that's perfect. My
that
God.
Whole passage, I like Ugh. Blocked it out in red on my screen because like I have goosebumps. And I think that yeah. is where I get on my Little Roman Empire, that they were in love. Mm-hmm. They weren't fuck buddies.
Yeah, like true. I mean, read it and wait, people.
Yeah, I know we saved the romance part for the end, but like, I did really love their romance. Like, I think there's just a lot of other good things in the story that like were really delectable and easy to like chew through in our conversation. But them like falling for each other and him like slowly moving into her rooms mm-hmm. and like them that like beautiful like language
they were loved. Yeah.
feels it's lovely. I love it.
I do too, and especially yeah. given like. Despite everything that her dad put him through, yeah. he loves her. And like, that's how you know it's not yeah. easily corruptible. Cause it's like, yeah. despite of all can of I, that.
Can well, I read one more?
Yeah, do one more.
Okay.
Please do.
So this is chapter 77. So this is pretty deep
a
into
reading
the book.
From the book of Mary Eve.
A reading from the book of Bristol Keats. Or according to Bristol Keats. I'm like cross today. I'm in my little audiobook narrator. Bristol leaned into Tigan's embrace, not trying to hide anything from anyone anymore. She happily breathed in the dust and sweat on his skin and the scent of pine and juniper grounded in his clothes from which she sent him crashing to the forest floor during drills. The dirt smudge across his cheekbones somehow managed to make him any more handsome. "We're ruthless today," he whispered in her ear. "Will you be ruthless tonight?" She pulled the grass from his hair. "Is that what you want? Not an ounce of mercy?" "I don't need sleep," he whispered as his mouth met hers. But she knew tonight it would be she who was at his mercy. His mouth knew every curve, every dip, and every hollow in her body, every quivering nerve. And he seemed to take great pleasure in helping her discover them all too. His hand discreetly eased beneath her shirt, his thumb stroking her breast, fanning embers already burning inside her. You can tell, like it you is can. A fiery, passionate. Love. And I'm just like, I loved them.
Addie, you're so I right. Love. Like, there's just so much love, and it's so beautiful. And I love their relationship. And I think the way they feel about each other and like the real rawness of their love for each other, too, is what makes their breakup at the end hit yeah. so much harder. So, mm-hmm. what happens is that Bristol finds out that Tigan's been hiding so much stuff. From her. This is when she finds out about her father. Like, this is where everything comes together for her. And so she's like, "You've been lying to me, and like our deal is off. I will do it, but I will not be civil about it. And mm-hmm. we're fucking done. And I don't believe you. And you said it was love, but love cannot exist with the actions that you've done." And in this like in a feeling of immense rage, she like tears down the hallway to their room, destroys all their of like his stuff, throws everything, like throws out the earrings. These like, I think they were like ruby earrings he got her or something. Am I making that up?
No, I think you're right.
Like, I think it's right ruby earrings. Yes.
Yeah.
Gifts. And she's just like, "Get the fuck out. I'm over you." And it like, mm-hmm. they fight, and it's like, oh my God. It was like, it was hardcore. Literally my comment that I wrote when I was reading, it was like, that breakup was hardcore with her throwing all of his shit everywhere.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Like was, that would she, be like, him she destroyed, throwing like, it out the window.
Yeah. And then afterwards she was like, "Damn, I should have kept those."
Yeah. She was like, "Shit." But then like in the same way that intense breakup, that's the night. And then he has like horrible nightmares. And we talked about earlier, the like, everyone's like, "No, you can't do anything." She's like, "No, I will sit with him." And he's like, "No one sits with me." He's like chained up. And she's like, "I will stay with you." And so I loved the dichotomy of them breaking up and then also them reconciling, sort of. She's like, "I do love you. I am heartbroken. I'm very hurt. Do not make me choose between you and my father. But I will stay. Like, I will choose. I do care for you." And that was
yeah.
beautiful.
I think
to reconcile
that was the moment that you realized that she could put everything on a shelf.
She's a better person than I am.
She said, I'm going to put everything on a shelf for right now and do what I have to do. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, it was like, he is tormented. Yeah. He's not going to be sleeping. Yeah. Everybody's talking
about
how miserable he is.
345.
Yeah. Like, what can I do? And they're like, and then I loved this scene that was like right at the end of that. And someone was like, oh gosh, I can hear her screaming. Should we go in? And someone like just taps the person on the shoulder and goes, that's not the kind of screams you want to interrupt.
Yeah.
And I was like, uh-huh. And then it was like end credits. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I enjoyed.
So she sang mm-hmm. to him like the whole yeah. night to keep him from like losing himself in the nightmares. And then, you know, and then they fucked.
Yeah. Dumb.
Fun fact, one of my favorite tropes and something I often seek out in books, and this is maybe I'm going to get canceled for this. I love a third act breakup.
There's a ton of place. I agree. They are. I do like yes. them too.
So
the reconciling like makes them. It worth it.
So I love them in which the couple fights for their love. Mm. Like they both know that like it is a moment in time that has to pass and they have to have a discussion to get it out. Or like, he loves her so much, but he could break her heart and he takes her, like he takes himself out of the equation.
Ooh.
Like where, and she says, no, I love you so much that I will put aside whatever could happen to me for you. Like I love a moment where, like I just love a moment where a couple gets into an argument and screams because they love each other so much and they care about each other so much. And I feel like I love reading fan fiction where they get divorced and get back together because it truly shows that they
second chance
but it's also fighting for their love, and I think this was fighting for their love. Mm. And I will stand on that.
Yeah. I Addie, you're making me want to say we need to do a third act breakup episode because it's divisive. I love it. Which, and then you brought up second chance romance, like a divorce is even bigger than a third act breakup, so I'm here for this conversation. I do like a third act breakup. I will say in this book, and according to Bristol Keats, I did feel like the ending was a little abrupt.
Agreed.
So much happened right at the end. And I saw in a lot of reviews that I don't think I'm the only one. I think all of us kind of agree. I don't think we're the only ones who feel that way either.
But like, it is the first of a duology. So yes. Like she did have to set it up.
Yeah, no, totally. I think it just was like, oh my God, that's the it. That's the end. Like that's it. Which is a good feeling. And also like what's going to happen? Like it's good and frustrating. So.
Yeah. And imagine reading this book a year ago and then you're like, oh, fuck, when's the sequel come out?
Know, what do you mean? Mary E. Pearson, come on.
Mary E. Pearson. First name,
Mary
last name.
E. Pearson, will you be friends with us? Can we add you
she
to
already
our
is. Chat? We already are friends.
Trans, Mary, Mary worry. Besties. One other little fun thing we haven't mentioned yet, but I feel like we should, is finding out that Cormac was Bristol's ex-boyfriend in the real world.
Oh, yeah.
That was fucking crazy. When
I think I had to read that twice because at first I was like, did
uh-huh.
I?
Uh-huh. Because again, it's like one of those things. And this is how I know that the marble courtyard thing is going to come up later. She mentioned him so casually in the first two chapters. And I was like, huh, that's weird. And then you like move on. And then all of a sudden she's walking on one of these bridge streets in the kingdom. And someone's like kind of like blocking her way and she's trying to sidestep them, and all of a sudden she gets pushed into this alley and she's like, holy shit, why is Mick here? Mick the bike tour guy.
Yeah.
And he kind of threatens her, and there's a hint of possible sexual violence, and she like pulls a blade out on him.
Yeah.
And then later on in the book, it turns out this guy, not just her ex-boyfriend bike tour guy, but the fucking king of the deep, dark, creepy, trying to take over the world kingdom.
And they've had
her ex-boyfriend.
Yeah. And they were sexually intimate. So there was, wasn't there some conversation about like smelling
they've
him on
it.
Her? Like, I don't know if I, like, there's just like,
Tygon was pissed.
Yeah. He
not
was
her, but him.
So mad at the situation.
Like,
and
I
ate that up.
You fucked that man. Mm-hmm. Like, there was no feeling, like, there wasn't really any deep feelings between the two of them, but I love that that's in there. So. Mm-hmm. And it blew my mind.
Like,
I didn't see
in
it
like
coming.
The ball scene, she like kind of convinced Cormac to come aside with her because she said she had some like juicy information for him. And in that, you know, he like obviously threatens her. I think he kind of hurts her a little bit, but she gets some hair.
Oh yeah.
And Tygon didn't know the plan, I don't think, ahead of time. And he was really worried about her, that she had been kidnapped, that she had been taken. Yeah. And he was like freaking out. So to see a man's freaking out for your safety is always kind of hot.
And she's like, you need to trust me. I do. You've been training me for months. I know what I'm doing. I got these hairs so we could do that little spell that helps us see from his eyes.
I've
done literally that.
We also didn't even really talk about the training.
I don't think the timeline was very... Who cares? Don't worry about it. To be fair...
There was training. TLDR, training happened. There was training montages.
At least her training. She was, like, not good at it.
Yeah. That was very clear.
It was better than also, her being like, oh my God, I'm surprisingly amazing at all these things.
I can wield a sword because I can deliver pizza.
Also, just sidebar about her... the training montage situation. There's other students who also... came from the real world, who are all kind of annoying, but all her close friends, but she also only talks about herself around. But also there's training montages.
Well, there was like a weird, I mean, she becomes a favorite
of
the king.
What they were trained to be.
So I don't think, well, they were like, you need to know all these things so that you can do this magical thing we need, but you don't really know your magic. So just, I'm hoping in the next book we get a little bit more info, because the whole point of it was you need to find this door and open it. And in this whole book, did we find the door? No. So
we also kind of forgot we were supposed to be opening a door.
But her mom found it.
Her mom.
And unleashed monsters.
Yeah.
With her sisters, she found a door to her sisters.
True. Oh, yeah, because there was a cute little family ferret.
So cute. In Paris's office. It was in someone's office, right?
Or it was in his room, his private room, where he was like marking his torture. And she gets, like, Bristol gets mad and closes it on accident. So I'm like curious to see how her emotions impact her magic. Because I love when there's that tie. Ooh. Well, there's one more thing I want to talk about before we talk about our overall thoughts and ratings and all that sort of jazz. There's an interesting literary device used through this book. It was that there was a dual POV of Tygon and Bristle, which is pretty standard, but there was also a lot of additional outside POVs that came from many, many different places. I want to know your thoughts on that before I share mine.
I love when Mary Pearson writes from the perspective of nature. She does wind so well. She can be the mind of wind any day. She should do that. And for me, I really appreciated the idea of the snake and like how it was kind of dual POV of her finding the portal. The snake was slithering across, hearing about a cat, feeling tortured and wanting to eat it. And then we also find out it's Bristol and she was the one calling for Cat. I didn't love the little add-on that felt a little cheesy, but that part I appreciate. I do get a little confused very easily with her writing style when she switches within a chapter and you kind of have to
I feel exactly the same.
Reread. Kelsey, I do want to hear your thoughts.
Well, I want to hear Addie's and then I'll go on my mini soapbox. It's like a tiny soapbox I'll stand on.
Addie?
Ooh, I love a soapbox. Is that it sitting behind you? Sorry. So I feel the same. I think that she is an exceptionally good writer, especially writing as nature or writing as a non-main character or chapter. I agree. It tripped me up. Like, I would be reading and all of a sudden I'd be like, wait a minute, what am I doing right here? Or like, if your attention's been drifted a little or you were reading and you're about to go to bed, it wasn't like, oh, we're hard cutting at her and starting at him. I think I'd actually be curious to listen to this as a ensemble audiobook where you have different voices for different things and see if that helps you to switch it. I think the other thing would be interesting is if books were like printed in color and you could have a color change or something in which you could like visibly see that it was different. Because I think that like when you're so ingrained in something and you're so deep into something, having it switch on you without something to physically signal your brain was hard for me.
Yeah. Or hot take, Mary E. Pearson, I keep needing to clarify. She needed to do a better job making it clear who was speaking. Like, I think those are all fun bonus pieces. Like, her writing was very flowery and beautiful, but I think she had way too many outside POVs that were different from our two main characters, along with what Mary mentioned, that it was not clear who was talking at first initially. It was like, you had to work a little bit harder. There's a reason why in books often you will name what character is speaking at the start of that section. My biggest complaint, and I'm not the only one who felt this way, was that there were too many of those dual POVs. Yeah. It was not clear who they were, how they were connected. I literally wrote a note of like, the author is going to need to work very, very hard to make this make sense. When I ended mm-hmm. the book, I did not feel like there was a overarching through line of what all those other perspectives were. I think she yeah. would have, I think it would have been more impactful had we just had one or two or three, like, sort of, in betweens of alternative POVs. It made me think about, like, in contrast, one of my favorite kind of like breadcrumbing alternative POV devices I've read is in The Serpent in the Wings of Night. I think Carissa Brodbit did a phenomenal job. It was a narrator who was outside but was telling the story of the past of the lead character Araya and her father. And her relationship mm-hmm. to her father is a really fascinating undercurrent of the story. And it was still this very like poetic, beautiful prose that felt different from the narrative of Araya.
Like you're getting the added detail without...
And I loved how that worked in that story because it was separate. It was also italicized in the book. It was a different voice mm-hmm. and cadence. It was telling us something overarching over the cross of the book. Yeah. And I think I was hoping that's what Mary was doing, and it didn't feel that way. It was more just confusing, pretty to read, but like I just it didn't work for me.
And she did that maybe so well in Remnant Chronicles, using the verses with the italicized. And it was like, it started the chapter. And you'd read those verses like 12 times, at least I did. Because I was like, what does this mean? What are you alluding to? And then she would have the main character, whose name suddenly slips my mind, plus
sometimes I forgot her name.
As nature. And I love it when she writes from the perspective of nature.
That you know, it almost reminds me of that overarching piece that goes throughout Fourth Wing. At the very top.
Oh, yeah.
Like the journal.
Where there's, and Fourth Wing, Rebecca Yarros, she has like that almost like paragraph at the very beginning of every single chapter that's an alternate POV that's happening. I think the other thing too is it's supposed to be breadcrumbing details. And I liked it breadcrumbing details. I think I agree. It was just a lot. And I think I needed something to physically like turn the lights off and turn the lights back on for me. But like, I think the reason why I bring up Eris before is that he gets breadcrumbed in like three pages at the very end of this book. Someone comes and tells him something in confidence and he holds it to himself and then mentions it again to someone else and says like, don't tell anybody I told you this, but can you investigate this for me? And so that gives me some of the suspicion that I feel like we're seeing later. And same with her dad, who his name is Logan in some world, but I don't remember what his other name is. Curious. He also gets a couple breadcrumbs where I'm like, something seems weird. So I think you're getting that. I think it's just like between all of these other hyper.
It's a lot like, to hold on to.
Premonitions, I would say. And then adding the level of nature, I think even just like italicizing or a different color would really help.
I think if it were up to me. We love the way Mary E. Pearson writes about nature. What if there was a narrative that was like about nature or like the nature of Elfheim that was one clear voice that was explaining it from like a narrator like perspective versus first person that could tell like the these stories? That could like still explain these characters and these moments. But maybe if it was clear that it was a narrative voice, maybe it would have worked better.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a very, very valid critique. And I'm with you.
Thanks for taking
it. Mary Pearson, if you're here, we adore you. It's just for your consideration.
Give us a poetry book of that stuff. And then,
give me a freaking book about just them being in love, daydreaming about it.
Honestly, you have our full permission to add poetry in between each chapter if you want.
Oh, yeah.
You can do whatever
just
you want.
Put in italics, please.
Yeah, put in italics so I know it's not like, you know, somebody else.
So speaking of our criticisms,
smart, Mary Pearson.
I want to just say, I think we should do ratings. Like, I think we said what we liked. We said what we didn't like. I think we should just say overall, let's rate it out of 5. And then would you recommend it? Because I think that's a good question for this one.
I feel like Mary should go last. I'm trying to load up my Goodreads so I remember exactly what I said.
I can go first while I'm talking.
Please.
I gave this actually 4 out of 5. And for someone who doesn't read a lot of fantasy lately, it's just not like what I've gravitated towards. I really enjoyed this and I felt like it was something that really pulled me in. I honestly took a star off just because of... I felt like I was trying to grasp a lot of details at once. And I feel like I was like trying to just figure out what was going on. I also feel like the training montages and then the door stuff, I wish she would have layered a little bit more in. And I think that that would have really helped it be a 5-star for me, because I think it would have given a little bit more of like her becoming Mulan, if you will, you know, like going to the training montage, taking over for her family.
Mulan.
Mary E. Pearson, if you are listening to this, my Goodreads review is, I need the last 30 pages on repeat in all capitals. That means I want this man to be tormented out of his mind with nightmares. And I want you to just write me fan fiction after fan fiction after fan fiction of her comforting her. Yes, he can comfort her. I want her comforting him. Mm-hmm. I want them to argue, fight for their love. He has a nightmare. She saves him.
I love it. Over and over again.
Just on repeat. I am a summer turned pretty crack stand. I want belly taken care of Conrad, the little injury every damn day. Okay.
Oh, we love that.
Addie, would you do me a favor and hold up the book? I have no idea how thick it is because I have it on my Kindle.
Let me go find it.
Yeah. While
I thought you had it on your.
No.
Oh.
Addie's like running away.
She's on her phone. It's like, I go find.
Yeah. Addie does what I do, and she took pictures of the page when it's a quote you love. I do the same thing.
It has like a little moon. This is what. Oh, this is why I bought it. She says moons.
Okay. It's honestly thicker than I thought.
Well, it's like over 500 pages. It's like 550.
Yeah. She's thick. So, fun fact, I am very easily persuaded by someone talking to me at a bookstore. Like, oh, duh. Yeah, this is a really pretty book. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it is really pretty.
Yeah, it is pretty.
And then I wear a moon necklace. I wear a moon necklace because I like what the moon represents. Growth, change, mm-hmm. can be different every single day. So it's a guiding light, whatever. And then I'm like, I don't need that book. And then I pick it up and it has freaking sprayed edges with moons on it. And I'm like,
duh. You're like, oh, okay.
Done.
Okay. And it's an independent bookstore. I'm like, okay, well, sure, why not?
You're like, wow, twist my arm. Well, I'm going to get my review.
I'm out of breath.
If y'all are ready. I'll transition back. I gave this book a solid 4 out of 5. Books about the Fae, where they're wicked and weird, like just always have a place near my heart. Like, I love them. And after really enjoying Mary E. Pearson's YA, I said this is a delightful jaunt into NA romantasy. Like, I thought it was a really good romantasy book. Is it my favorite romantasy book? No, but I think it's a solid 4 out of 5. Like, it's a good one. Yeah. I would recommend it. I would definitely recommend it.
I was going to say, I would recommend it too.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. Yes. I did it.
Yay!
I actually am going to recommend it to a friend of mine who reads only YA romantasy fantasy. And yeah, it's actually going to just say, the minute that you notice it's starting to go there, just skip. Because it is pretty delineated. Like, it's not like all of a sudden he has a boner. It's like,
yeah,
they're rubbing it out. And then his, you know, it's like, yeah, it's also pretty, I would say, pretty PG-13, maybe.
Yeah, fairly tame. Yeah, it's not.
It's in
super like, graphic.
Compared, yeah, it's not compared super, to what we read. But I'm saying, like, I'm going to recommend it to a friend of mine who reads a YA romantasy because I think she would love it. Okay. Like, I think she'd really like it.
So I hate to sound like a broken record, but I also gave it a 4 out of 5. I do give it a 3 out of 5 in the Mary E. Pearson world, but a 4 out of 5 in the world of literature in general. I gave it a 4 out of 5 because I just can always appreciate how easy it is to fall into her storytelling. And she builds up a world that I am so intrigued by. I was like, is this Alice in Wonderland? Is this also kind of like a little bit of ACOTAR? Is this a Beauty and the Beast situation? Like, what is happening right now? And like, it's all of it. It's every little glimmer of every fairy tale you've ever loved, and also folklore and myth. You know what I mean? Like, you can probably find nuggets of all your favorite fairy tales in almost anything she writes. So it feels cozy and homey. I think Bristol's a really great character. I appreciate that nobody in this book is just a one-dimensional, perfect, knows, is good at everything right away and is good at saving the day. No problem.
Yeah.
I love the conflict in the story. I think it's amazing that these parents who don't always get to have a story are a huge part of their daughter's journey. And we get to hear about their own. It's incredible. I gave it a 3 out of 5 in the Mary Pearson world because kind of what we were alluding to, it goes really hard and then it slows way down and then it just kind of ends. So the pacing of the book is like, it's not the best that she's done for that, but I'm holding out hope that it's because the sequel's setting us up for something. Mm. So
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that makes total sense.
I love that we're all in agreement. We're all like,
yay,
it's a four. Huzzah.
No. It's a four. We've got a four.
Yay. Yay. I feel like a four. Of the baddies we do, the three of us like YA the most. It's a four. Like, it makes sense, I think, that this is something that resonated for the three of us. So I love it.
And it's interesting listening to the three of us catch different things and talk about different things. Like, you I caught this thing. I'm going to, like, go back and stuff with the ex that I did not, that you were mentioning. And I was like, I don't remember that. And then there is stuff that even you guys were mentioning about the mom and dad that's like, oh, their love was like this. And I'm over here thinking about the political intrigue. So it's like, I love to read it now with your perspective of what you are paying attention to, and flip it is probably the reason why I love you guys the most.
This is why we talk about books with friends.
Yay! I love all of us the most.
Well,
yes. I feel like the biggest question I have is, if we were to take each of us and make us each a sister, who would each of us be?
I love how casually you moved into our closing question. We did plan this. So.
I am just a sneaky baddie, and I also need to know. And I also
Well, yeah, because there's three of us and there's three sisters. So as a reminder, there's Bristol. She's in the middle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. There's Kat. Who's the
oldest?
And there's
most
Harper,
beautiful.
Who's the baby? Ooh, and Harper, who's the baby?
Harper is the book nerd. She's very sweet. She's kind of quiet. She's a little quirky. Bristol's obviously the main character, and then Kat is the tall, blonde, beautiful singer. And that's because they all kind of have talents that are from their Bay heritage. And Harper is, you know, her love of knowledge and truth and everything. Bristol is, of course, you know, held back by her tick. And then Kat is that she's very musical and artistic and very like beautiful beyond what would be considered normal for a human. So
hot slay.
Kelsey, you're Kat because you're hot as fuck.
Oh my God. I also feel like I'm just the big sister. Like, yeah, I knew about your fucking tick, babe. Like, get over it.
Oh, sorry. I'm pretty sure Harper is the oldest.
Yeah.
Eldest. What? Am I the pro? It's me. Hi. I swear to God, Kat was the oldest.
Because
I thought she heard her sister singing, and that's why she was yelling for Kat.
Harper's voice bellowed up the stairway like she was a 6-foot bouncer instead of a 16, skinny 14-year-old waiting for a girl's spurt. What Bristol's little sister lacked in stature, she made up in volume. So what? Harper is the youngest.
So Harper is the youngest.
Yeah.
Kat is the oldest.
Okay.
Wait.
Okay. You're right.
I was right. Thank God. ChatGPT, suck my dick.
Wait. Addie, confirm.
Harper is the youngest.
Okay.
Kat is the oldest.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. So the old eldest daughter, big sis energy. I'm beautiful beyond measure. You know how it is. That'll be me. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Addie, I feel like you're obviously the baby of us. You're our sweet angel. Quirky. Cutie.
Notices the political intrigue.
Yes, in the books, in the details. Like, baddie Addie, little
political
baby
intrigue.
Addie. You're our baby sister. And that leaves Miss Mary.
Because I'm Mary Pearson. I'm none of the sisters.
No,
I am
you're
Mary
Bristol.
Pearson.
You're definitely Bristol. You're the
You're definitely Bristol.
Mm-hmm. You are
Thanks, guys.
Spearheading, taking care of the family. You're the homemaker. You're like, no one's going to do this. I'm going to fucking do it. You're on
I deliver pizzas.
Yeah, you're on your bike, zooming around.
I zoom around on my bike.
You don't take shit
pizza.
From the Fae who are telling you that you need to train for something. You're like, yeah, fuck it. I'll do it.
She loves a training montage.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But also, I could see Mary. I think any of your friendships are the kind of friendships where you put everything into them. And Bristol puts everything into hers.
True.
Aww,
she puts everything into her relationship. And I just see that so much in you, Mary.
Agreed. Let me tell you about my best friend.
Well, if we were sisters, I think we would have a great dynamic.
I agree.
I would love it.
I have a question.
Did
Steve ever bring the mail in? From Blue's Clues?
We just got a letter. Oh, yeah.
Full circle.
Hey, were you responding to our letter? We just got a letter. I wonder who it's from.
Hey.
Love.
It's a letter from our friends.
Addie, will you read the letter? It says it's titled Outro.
Yeah.
Just line. Outro.
He caressed her butt. Imagine Blue's Clues. And he opens up a letter and it's like straight, like, put your hands on the headboard for me. Like,
raise your ass, my queen. What?
Spread your cheeks.
Do you want a house tour?
Anyway, so thanks, of course, to our podcast daddy.
It's not Crosslyn. It's me today. I'm your father.
Thanks, of course, to our podcast mommy / daddy /
every parent you want.
Blue's Clues lady, Kelsey and Steve from Blue's Clues, for helping us keep on track and sounding as pretty as we look.
You're welcome.
Check out all the links in our show notes, where you can also find our schedule, which we conveniently change a lot. Patreon, previous episodes, and all over him. I'm sorry, I can't.
We really do. Y'all don't hold us to any schedule. We're trying our best.
I have ADHD. Leave me alone.
Simply,
anyways, sort of. Patreon, previous episodes, our important social media channels. It's Books and Daddy's Pod on the Instagram and Books and Daddy's Pod on TikTok. Mm. All in one convenient place. Remember, hotties can read whatever they want, except for me sometimes because I have books I got to read for baddies. But just chase those bliss, baddies.
Chase bliss.
That was chaotic. I'm really sorry.
Get that tick out of you. No tick.
And remove your tick. Embrace who you're meant to be.
I'll get the tweezers. Even if you hold them down.
Love you.
Love you. Bye.